847-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And let's go here, Sandy. Once again, China has blockaded Taiwan. And because we've got a congressman or a senator who says, this is what I'm, or a speaker who says, I'm going to show China. I am.
Well, I mean, the fact is that when the Speaker of the House, if you're an outside government, a government outside the United States, you would believe the Speaker of the House has a good deal of power. They do sit number three in line to be president. The House Speaker does have a lot to do with laws that get passed. And so when the Speaker invites the President of Taiwan to come and visit, that could seem to be a very significant thing. When you've got people in our Congress talking about defending Taiwan with military troops, we've got people in Congress talking about warfare with China, having a military that can have a war with China. When we've got a Defense Department that talks openly about arming itself in expectation of a war with China, if you're China, you hear all of that, that all sounds pretty foreboding, right? So when this has happened, when Nancy Pelosi went there, they did the same thing. They basically put out on a demonstration saying, look, Formosa lies within our hegemony. Formosa is part of the one China. Formosa is right in our backyard. If you want to talk about something military about Formosa, look, we can put a blockade around this island, which is, you know, bigger than the state of Delaware, but not as big as the state of Florida. We can blockade this island, make it logistically impossible, okay?
For anything to get in or out.
In or out. So what are you talking about? You know, and that's it. And most of the rest of the world has looked at this 3-day military exercise and says that it and say, look, this is a fairly restrained exercise. It's simply a demonstration, again, to the rest of the world about the situation, the real politic that is involved with Taiwan, the one China policy that all but 11 countries in the world observe. And those 11 countries, incidentally, are not countries that will send military assistance to Taiwan. And it's St. Kitts and Tuvalu. And, you know, I read the countries last year. They're all island nations other than Guatemala. And they aren't Australia or New Zealand. So, you know, this is, again, I think a question of the naivete in America about our China policy, the lack of the American government explaining to the people what our policy is with China. We have a State Department that announces regularly, like every 3 weeks recently, that we still maintain a one China policy, which means one thing. And yet we still have this strategic ambiguity concept, which that ambiguity apparently means that American politicians can play a macho game with respect to our military might and talking about exercising our military might vis-a-vis China. Well, the only place that would occur apparently is Taiwan. And so it's very worrisome to me. Very.
So Sandy, let's say, this is what we're going to do, and we, the United States, we're going to protect Taiwan. Now, it's easy to say that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's easy to say it.
I know that,
but I mean, you know, at most, first of all, I think it would be a proxy war. I would be surprised if anyone in the Pentagon would agree that it would be an idea worth considering to put boots on the ground in Taiwan, American boots on the ground in Taiwan, with respect to a full-out war with China. And the problem with a war with China is that Taiwan is toast unless China's mainland were put onto a war footing and were forced to defend itself from the United States. Does the United States should not, is not, could not possibly be willing to go to war directly with China over Taiwan, particularly in light of the fact that the United States has since 1971, really, unofficially, adopted a one-China policy which says Taiwan is part of China.
You know, Sandy, I don't know if it's the fact that the... So let me interject this, Sandy. Wall Street Journal today, Ukraine may run out of air defenses by May. Leaked Pentagon documents warning. Now, the proxy war that we are supporting in Ukraine, we knew at some point in time Ukraine couldn't sustain air defense, right? I mean, it's just, we know that. So what are we going to do now? We brought them to this point. They're going to run out of air defense. That, to me, that says, Sandy, something to the next level has to happen now. If we're going to make an even more major commitment to Ukraine, because if their air defenses are just about gone, they're sitting ducks. Well, they're admitting that this is going to happen. So now,
well, actually, it's much more ironic than that. It's that there was a leak of all these documents. The ProPublica found them ultimately, but these documents were posted on a kids' war game site for apparently weeks, and it wasn't until they were found and posted in Telegram, which is a Ukrainian and Russian vehicle for communication, social media communication primarily. It wasn't until they were posted there that our military and intelligence figured this out. So, wow, number one, that should worry us a little bit about how acute our military and civilian intelligence apparatus is. But two, this is American information, apparently. And this American information included eavesdropping we've done on internal Israeli communications and others. So, I mean, we got to get our intelligence game back in order, number one. We've got to get it in order so that it's doing what it ought to be doing, and we ought to understand all that it's doing, because this isn't the first time that we've had an ally find out that we're listening in. I think Angela Merkel found out that we were listening in on her phone calls in another
right.
earlier prior leak.
Well, you know, Sandy, again, the American people who want to see us continue our involvement with Ukraine, and as Joe Biden and others have said, we're with them all the way. If by next month they lose their air defense system,
right?
They're done, right?
Well, that's right. What they've had so far is the capacity with their air defense system to defeat Russian air superiority. But if Russia gets air superiority so that they can use fighter planes and bombers over the battlefield, that pretty much tips the scales significantly in the Russian favor.
So then if you are the United States of America and we've been committing all of these things, it means a major escalation, right? If we now have to provide even more air defense systems.
Well, apparently the news was that it would be very hard logistically for us to get to them the munitions necessary in time enough, that we're supplying them with 14 or some such number of new systems,
which is
nowhere near the size and number of air defense systems that they currently have in place, and that 14 wouldn't do the job. And so I suppose what you come down to is, if you don't have surface-to-air missiles to beat air superiority, then you better have fighter planes and things flying in the air that can. And if the Ukrainian Air Force, as fortified by the MiGs and other planes being supplied to them now by Poland and Slovakia and other nations, aren't sufficient to beat Russian air superiority, then, of course, that begs the question, what's the next move?
So, Sandy, do you possibly see the United States, because this offensive is coming,
Well, I think if Putin in fact did call for a ceasefire, or if he put the word out, I think it could well be with this intelligence in hand, knowing that, you know what, Ukraine's in a vulnerable position. The spring offensive, maybe what we can do, maybe we're in the best negotiating position right now to have a ceasefire and a negotiation, and maybe that's the case. I mean, you know, it is probable that what Putin wants is the Donbas region, Crimea, and the land bridge, the things that he currently holds with military force, to be ceded to Russia. It's the land that was the part of Russia before 1954 and the revision of the Ukrainian boundaries, and a neutrality for Ukraine. And so the West and Ukraine are going to have to swallow is the recognition of the annexation. But it's pretty clear from Blinken's statements and others that we've never thought that Ukraine can or should try to regain Crimea, because that is known to be such a red line for Russia and so fundamentally important to them. And we didn't keep them from annexing Crimea when they did in 2014, in recognition probably of that same fact.
Well, it says Kiev is depleting its last reserves of 300 missiles, making it possible for Russia to achieve air superiority immediately.
Yeah. That's what I was saying.
Right.
So I think that's the prognosis, that in May, Russia could have air superiority absent something else.
So you don't want to wait until May to make the decision, right? If you're Ukraine, you don't want to wait until you've depleted all of your air missiles and the surface-to-air missiles and your air defense systems before you start talking peace, right?
Well, that would be my view. Has been that there is this ultimate probable realpolitik solution to this that has resided there all of this time.
All right, got to go to break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. I mean, Sam.
World. And although most men are hoes, he goes on the down low, cause I never heard about him with another girl. But I don't sweat it, because it's just pathetic to let it get me involved in that.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. Sandy, let me go here. I was Ron DeSantis. Your thoughts on Ron DeSantis?
Well, I haven't spent enough time thinking about Ron DeSantis to thoroughly formulate my thoughts, but it seems like his knee-jerk reaction is all about being controversial and getting and reaching as far to the edge of the right as he can possibly feel comfortable doing, and sometimes he surprises me by how very far that is.
You know, the reason I asked is in today's The Hill. Ron DeSantis, the next Scott Walker, and if you listen to this, okay.
Well, if by the next Scott Walker they mean that he's going to lay an egg on the national stage,
that's exactly what they are saying.
I think that's sort of what's happening. I mean, I think they're maybe finding out that he doesn't play as effectively on the national stage as they thought he would when he was the conservatives' darling in Florida. But, you know, the time will tell. He took some positions over this past weekend that were surprising to me. I mean, I think he's pretty far out there, and I think they might have a different problem. I think he's a brighter, smarter person than
Scott Walker was.
I think Scott Walker's failure on the national stage was that he didn't come across as the as a terribly bright bulb, and that he had, that you know what he had accomplished in Wisconsin was done by dint of brute force from some conservatives, particularly Title X. I think DeSantis, on the other hand, might just have some problems with lack of charm appeal.
So when we clearly there was Ron DeSantis and the creation of Ron DeSantis and, you know, the anti-Trump people had to find somebody who could take that mantle. They were separating themselves from Donald Trump, and they had to find a person, you know, who could take, you know, Trump's messages and not be Donald Trump. It hasn't been working very well.
I think the problem is that the people who like Donald Trump still like Donald Trump.
That's exactly.
And I think there was a period where they were weaning themselves away from him, but he continues to be there. I think this prosecution of him has brought back a whole bunch of people who were looking for any excuse to say that he deserved their loyalty. We'll see, though. I mean, I do think the Republican Party has looked at the same data that Paul Ryan will discuss, which is basically that Donald Trump for the Republican Party has been a loser. For Donald Trump, he was a winner. You know, winning one presidency was more than Donald Trump ever really thought he would achieve in 2014, but then he got it. Now, he lost the second time around, and as far as he was concerned, that was a personal loss, but he didn't care about all the other Republicans who lost. He didn't care about. He doesn't care about anything but Donald Trump.
You know, Sandy, it's still, and historians will probably shake their heads when they say, can you believe that Donald Trump was president of the United States for 4 years?
Well, the problem with historians and with history is they don't get a sense of the flavor of the man, okay?
Okay.
So I don't think history will remember him as the buffoon, charlatan, Barnum and Bailey type figure that he was. They won't be able to remember him as this TV personality, this person who gave speeches that were stream of conscience, you know, sort of radical nonsense, this person who could tell 30,000 untruths in a year or in a term, and that was just who he was, and everyone, they won't remember all that. So what will be remembered historically will be a broad characterization, this TV personality, this populist. They'll call him a populist. They'll say he was flamboyant. They'll describe him in a variety of ways. But, you know, this is the way Warren Harding has been described. We've had various presidents in the past who are described in ways that don't really reflect what they felt like in the moment.
Do you can kind of sense Donald Trump and who he is and the fact that people who thought they were done with him falling back into his trap again?
Well, then the polls, you know, I'm like...
The polls are saying
that. The Fox poll suggested that. DeSantis's decline in the polls seemed to suggest that. There hasn't been any other Republican to surface that looks like a real pretender. Nikki Haley, who knows... she doesn't seem to be able to get media coverage. But you know why? Because Donald Trump very effectively sucks the air out of the room. It's kind of like Aaron Rodgers and the Packers sucking the air out of a discussion of anyone else but Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. As far as the Republicans are concerned, nobody talks about anyone but Donald Trump, because every day something is either happening to Donald Trump or Donald Trump is making some declaration that's worthy of all of the news.
So by the time 2024 comes around, it's going to be even increased, the media and Donald Trump.
Undoubtedly. I mean, I don't the media has this problem. It just covers whatever it is that's going to cause people to
watch.
And right. So people go to NASCAR races. They don't go to see the person who's going to win. They go to see the accidents.
So hold the thought, Sandy. We've got to go to a break. The comparison of Donald Trump and NASCAR accidents.
Yeah,
I know.
It's pretty good, actually.
Yep. We'll be right back.
and better bring a check around. To the sad, sad truth, the dirty law down. Big idea.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, Sandy, there's so many issues that we're dealing with. We didn't talk about the economy. There's still all these different things that are happening with the economy that keep you kind of off balance.
Well, the tea leaves are very confusing to economists, to, you know, the Wall Street Journal, everyone, all the pundits look at the tea leaves and say, well, you know what? The job market still, you know, they say the job market's weaker. Wow, the job market this last month created 260,000 jobs, which is actually a strong job market. It just isn't as strong as it had been for the prior period. Inflation did ebb a little bit, you know, so it reduced to some extent, and so it's now unclear what would be the appropriate response of the Federal Reserve. There's still some post seismic shocks ongoing with respect to the banking industry. There's no question that there's been an erosion of trust in banks. Banks are built on trust, and you know, the FDIC was there to basically fortify the trust in banks, but there are plenty of banks that have many deposits that are far in excess of the FDIC guarantee, and there has been a process over the past weeks of money flowing out of banks and into the money market, the money market being a place where it's not as likely to have a broad failures, number one. Number two, there's a higher interest reward for putting the money there on a short-term basis. And so money deposits have been flowing out of banks at a greater rate than had occurred before. So banks are somewhat weaker. The weakness of banks contributes to the possibility of recession. But the talk about recession continues to be, well, it's inevitable, but it also continues to be uncertain when, okay? But,
so, Sandy.
So we've been talking like that for a couple of years.
I know. It is amazing. It's been a couple of years,
yeah.
And but there, people are using credit in the face of all of this. They haven't slowed down with credit.
Well, jobs,
the interest rates have gone through the roof.
Yeah,
and people are still using the credit as if the chicken's not going to come home to roost on that.
Well, to some extent, that's a lesson that our world got used to, the financial world. And all of us got used to cheap money, very low interest rates for consumer loans, very low interest rates on mortgage loans, low interest rates on commercial loans and business loans. That cheap money, the habit for cheap money is hard to break. And also the habit of utilizing credit month to month on a more regular basis, operating a little closer to the bone financially, happens in that circumstance. And so I think a large part of our economy is having trouble getting away from operating what I would call close to the bone financially and needing to resort to credit on a relatively regular basis. And then in inflation, there's this motivation to buy it now rather than later because the price is going to go up. So you might use credit thinking that you can pay off the credit fast enough so that that interest you pay doesn't eat up the savings you're making by buying it now rather than waiting to buy it at a more expensive price later. So there always has been, during periods of inflation, a tendency for people to move in the direction of using credit and not avoiding the use of credit. It sounds backwards.
Yeah.
But if there's enough inflation, you're incented to buy it now and borrow some money in the hopes that you can pay it off quickly so that the amount you pay in interest doesn't eat up the savings you made by buying it now.
Yeah, but buying it on credit now damages you twofold, right?
Yep. I mean, the financial world, sometime if we had a long time, I could explain why Warren Buffett is right that the only stocks that make sense are the ones that pay cash or that you can derive cash out of, because stocks are a shell game. Even the most fundamental thing we think about, stocks and almost never feed out the amount of money that people invest to buy them. And so it's all about who will buy it next at a higher price. So much of our financial world is psychological and not totally rational. I would assert that close to 100% of our financial world operates with a great deal of emotional overtones and undertones.
So explain this to an average guy like me and many in the audience. So inflation has caused havoc on prices and those kinds of things to the degree that the economy has to be slowed down, and so eventually people are losing, that they're not moving forward. Inflation eats up what it is we have, so we're moving backwards. We're not moving forward. But then the inflation has caused the credit card interest rates to go through the roof.
Uh-huh.
So the average person who's living that paycheck to paycheck is now compounding their problems, because it's a little breathing room for them, they think, by going to the credit that's available to them.
Well, to some extent they do it volitionally, because they decide they want to buy the car now rather than waiting for it to go up in price, and they swallow the interest rate in the hopes that it's a credible, smart decision. To some extent, they do it because they're living paycheck to paycheck, and that increased inflation has caused them to need to borrow money to make it. Okay, so that's the buildup in a credit card that is very hard to pay off, and is an overhang on the economy that can be a big problem. I've talked about this over the past months. The problem for Tom, Dick, and Mary is that the business cycle basically runs against their interest in almost every way. Sometimes it gets them a job, but maybe they get to keep their job through this recession because of the tendency for people to hold on to employees. But the tools to control the business cycle tend to have their biggest impact on Tom, Dick, and Mary. Interest rates go up, makes it hard to buy things. Inflation eats at their income faster than their income goes up. So, yeah.
So this credit debt that you pile on top of everything else is kind of the kiss of death. You're going to eventually put yourself in a situation with the credit debt that you can't ever dig yourself out of. Is that?
Well, sure, because if you have to borrow money this month because you don't have enough cash flow, either you better pull in your horns and have more disposable cash flow available to you next month, not easy to do.
Right.
Or you're going to have to borrow more money next month on top of what you borrowed last month, and it gets harder and harder to pay it back because you're living paycheck to paycheck. So unless you were somehow going to fall into a little pile of money, there's no saving you from that spiral.
So, but then the credit card company says, okay, you got this much credit debt. Why don't you take out even more credit? I've got a card that's going to be zero interest for 24 months. Why don't you put all that debt you have from these other cards on this card? And it sounds like it makes sense. But really what it is digging you deeper. Is that?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are counselors to work on it, but it ends up being if you're in a negative cash flow situation, you can't get out of that situation by borrowing money. The only way you can get out of that situation is to either increase your revenue or decrease your expenditures. And it's hard in a recession to increase your revenue, so what you have to do is decrease your expenditures. And for some people, and as we've demonstrated on this show a bunch of times, for the median families in America who are living paycheck to paycheck right now with no room for savings, it means cutting out something that seems very basic, cutting out health care, cutting out things that other people would view as necessities.
But, you know, that car that people are talking about, I'm not talking about people who can even begin to even imagine buying a new car. I'm saying people who are borrowing against the credit cards for food to pay the furniture bill, to pay necessities.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
that's the problem with Washington and the politicians in Washington, and they clearly don't have a clear understanding of the desperation of the families in America who are living at the median income or below that median income, because those people are living paycheck to paycheck. And if you're living below the median level, you're slipping. Okay, you're living paycheck to paycheck, and it's getting worse each month. It's not like you've got equilibrium and you can make it. No, each month it gets a little more desperate. If you're at the lower end of the middle class, or if you're below that, and so the things that could save us from that, daycare could at least help us with that, daycare, healthcare, these modest things that are necessities for everyone, could at least possibly make it easier for the families that are.
So let me paint a scenario that most people might not know. April 15th is tax day, right?
Yeah.
For some. For all, April 15th. But it's also the day in I think across the state that anybody who has We Energies, it's the date that the bill comes due.
The moratorium on payments from the winter months,
April 15th,
gets lifted, and suddenly the gas bill
is due, and the electric bill are due.
Yeah,
and if you are struggling, as you talked about, and you don't have a home that is energy efficient,
right,
and you've got a home where the windows, the caulking and all of that, you know, windows need to be replaced. And let's say you're renting, and you know, and the homes are, you know, 75 years old, 80 years old. We got plenty of that kind of stock, right? Now you haven't been able to pay that gas bill, electric bill. All of a sudden, you owe $6,000, and the bill is due,
right?
And so what happens is We Energies can cut off your gas and electric. And what happens, Sandy, is those people are now homeless. Because even though they're in a house, if there's no gas or electric, you're basically homeless.
Yeah.
There's no hot running water. And so what I'm saying, Sandy, is if you've got credit, What are you going to do? If you're fortunate enough to have it, you're not going to wait. And then We Energy says, well, we'll work out a deal with you. We're not going to cut people off, but you owe us $6,000. Give us $5,000.
Well, they'll work out an add-on to each bill, and it'll be a bunch. And so people slip further and further behind.
Yeah, but
but
in order to even make this happen, you got to give us $5,000 up front to even work out the deal. And all I'm saying is people are at a horrible place, and you were talking about the fact that the government doesn't understand
Well, they couldn't understand it, because if they understood it, they would be talking about it, because there's so many people who live at this level,
right,
and most of them feel guilty about living at this level. They think that they're failures. They think that there's something wrong with them. They are.
Should the government
hopeless.
Care?
Well, of course the government should care, because there's too many people living in this circumstance, too big a part of our population. The government ought to be rolling up its sleeves and figuring out why, It's like our medical community right now that gives out pills instead of solving health problems. Our government tends to give out Band-Aids, but without looking at the fundamental problems that require the Band-Aids. And so if we had honest and dedicated politicians who were representing the people, they'd be spending a great deal more time figuring out why and trying to work on the why than just reacting to the brush fires.
All right, we've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. We'll be right back. Say that on the other side. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. It's Monday. That means Monday's with my co-host, Sandy. Sandy, read that statistic, because I don't think Americans will believe it.
I mean, this is further proof of the problem that middle America has with the current economy and the current geopolitical framework. Nearly 6 in 10 Americans don't have enough savings to cover a $500 or $1,000 unplanned expense. Only 41% of adults reported having enough in their savings account to cover a surprise bill of this magnitude. So, you know, there's no margin for error in middle America, or anyone who lives at or below middle America's median income. And without a margin of error, inflation hits you right away. A layoff is a disaster. The inability to pay your utility bill, if that's where you've had to scrimp, means that at the end of the time, you don't have money in the bank to pay it. I mean, we have an economy in which we've pushed everyone to the edge, and part of that pressure is the result of a loss of benefits at work, so that people not only live in fear of not enough savings, but they live in fear of anyone in their family getting sick.
So, Sandy, let's talk about the stress and that comes along with that. Let's talk about the where there's physical abuse of people with their spouses during these times, and that this is only going to be even more stressful.
I mean, this isn't the stress of battlefield, but living in a world of constant stress takes an extreme toll on us emotionally.
And, you're right.
And it takes an extreme toll on us sociologically. I'm sure it has a great deal to do with the way our country is operating sociologically. It probably has something to do with these guys picking up guns and shooting people.
Yeah,
that's... people are more likely to jump off the norm in a world in which they live a frightened world under constant stress. And there's really almost nothing as stressful as being lost in a sea of financial gloom.
Or a guy killing his family. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that kind of stress. There's really nothing that they can do. And because the creditor. The creditor.
I like debt-y, though. That's good. The debtor and the debtee.
The creditor does not have to. He can't feel that, and that's not his thing to feel.
The only thing he feels is the failure to get paid, and they even build that into their formula for what interest rate they charge, so they can absorb losses without falling below some profit target. We in America need to make sure that we watch more carefully how we've organized ourselves socioeconomically, so that a greater portion of our populace lives a comfortable life.
Let's do this. Let's put. Oh, she's gone. She's gone. But anyway, it is Sandy. It really is something that in this nation we had better get a grip on, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you mix that with guns. We talk about why people do what they do. A lot of times it is that stress from, and imagine, I've always said, in this country, what it must feel like to be a man and not be able to deliver.
Well, I mean, I think in today's world, Earl, it's a man or a woman. But being a person in this world and not being able to care for your family or to provide for your family or to provide even for yourself adequately is to destroy self-esteem. Right. And a person without self-esteem, I think, is fraught with the potential to do all kinds of things.
Yeah,
I mean, certainly suicide, certainly drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of things that are happening in our society that are a reflection of a loss of self-esteem. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with how they fit into our economy.
You know, Sandy, this goes back to something we were talking about earlier about fentanyl and those kinds of things. At the root of a lot of that is trying to escape, right? Drugs are an escape.
Yeah.
Alcohol is an escape. And the more you are under stress and duress, you're looking to escape.
Well, and I think even, you know, if the largest part of our population that suffer these drug problems are our young people.
Right.
But I think in many respects, the society and economy in which they live causes them to see little, to have trouble seeing their future, regardless of their race. The future for young people today is fraught with far more uncertainty than it was in our day. And if you don't have anything certain in your future and you begin to feel hopeless, or you need to escape, you know, that's what happens.
You know, Sandy, if I couldn't provide for my family, I wouldn't be the guy I am today. If I ever had to deal with a time and an issue that I couldn't provide for my family, it would be a difficult thing for me, right?
Yeah.
As for almost any
person. Yeah, I think for any person. And I think.
And yet, as you stated, 6 out of 10 eventually at some point in time struggling with that.
Yeah, I think it, you know, one of the themes, sometime we'll talk about it, but I think that one of the things that fascinates me is the extent to which the problems in our society and the tensions in our society are fraught within our society itself and not so much directly by the government, and the government is essentially the way we play it out. But, you know, much of the repression in our society is caused by corporations or places we work or the society around us. The definition
that we can't control.
Definition of patriotism that is subconsciously created that we all have to toe the line for, the sense of supremacy that some portions of our population might have that has an impact. So there's so much going on that's not created by our government, but which our government probably needs to react to, that makes the whole process much more complex.
All right. We got to leave it there. Thank you very much, Sandy. Thank everybody who made the show go. And we'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later. You know, Sandy.